Good morning, everyone. And as I've been saying all week long, I appreciate the opportunity to be the lead O&M instructor for this and just being involved with, you know, working with you seniors and all that. Although I am also a senior and getting ready to go celebrate my birthday next month in Okinawa. Just throwing that out. And we have our guest today is Ms. Jane Lansong. She worked here before at the Crisco Rehab Center, and she's now in Oklahoma. And I'm going to go ahead and let Jane finish introducing herself and giving her credentials. Take it away, Jane.
Thanks, Winter.
Morning.
You can tell Winford and I used to work together. My name is Jane Lansong. I'm now based in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I have switched to being an itinerant O&M teacher, which is a little harder than working at a center because you don't get to see your clients every day and you get to see all the growth and progress that we do at the training centers. But I'm a graduate of Louisiana Tech University, so I'm an NOMC, just like Winford and a lot of these other folks that spoke to you this week. And Winford has asked me to talk to you guys about street crossing. So one of the things I learned when dealing with the senior population, because in the state agencies for the blind, we tend to have two different types.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is Michelle Primer. Good morning, everyone.
All right. Welcome. I'm glad you could make it.
Michelle, we're
okay, thanks.
Michelle, we're going to let you mute yourself because we're already in the instruction part. And we're glad you're here.
I've already muted her. So go ahead.
We are glad to hear you coming in. And as I was saying, I'm an itinerant out of a state agency in Oklahoma, Agency for the Blind. And we tend to have two groups of clients in the state agencies. Most state agencies do. We have the young folks who want to go back to work. And then we have the over 55 who don't want to go back to work. And then, of course, those over 55 who want to work, we send them to the vocational counselors because you're never too old. I have a client who's 85 and got her PhD. I'm so proud of her. So, you know, it doesn't mean you can't go back to work, but it's two different pots of money. And typically in what we call the older blind program here in Oklahoma, we have people who are not going to be going off to training centers and getting, you know, really, really good training like Winford and I got. We're talking about folks who are, their main goal is to make sure that they square their walker up with a wheelchair ramp and go down straight, you know, and not fall off the curb. And so when we talk about street crossings, we need to talk about what kind of street crossings are right for you. And I can go into all kinds of details about all the different street crossings, and I probably will if you give me enough time. They've given me till noon Central Time here. So, but I want you guys to think, as you age and as you live in your communities and continue to get out of the house and do things in your lives, that if you can get an orientation and mobility instructor in your home area to work with you, you can decide what street crossings are good for you and what street crossings maybe you're not walking fast enough to go all the way across the street in the time that you've got during the cycle. So some of you guys are going to be like Winford and me. I'm 58. And Winford, you're not telling your age anymore, are you?
I'm 67.
67. He's almost 10. He's 9 years older than me. I can't believe it. And he's in better shape than me, too. That's hilarious. But as we get older as O&M teachers, we can kind of relate more to our clients who are not going to get out and do all the stuff that we did when we were getting our O&M training as kids. And so some of the different intersections, some of the different types of street crossings that folks need to deal with in the world is sometimes you have street crossings that are just a stop sign. And so you have two-way stops, three-way stops, and four-way stops. And a two-way stop is where you've got one street that is a major artery. And they don't have to stop for the little tiny residential street. So the residential street, it has to stop. But it goes all the way through the intersection, kind of makes a plus sign. But it has to stop for the big traffic. And then a three-way stop is where you get a T intersection. And everybody kind of has to stop. Sometimes they put a stop sign. Sometimes they just put a yield sign. Everybody kind of has to tap their brakes and look around, make sure nobody's wanting to cross. And then, of course, the four-way is the traditional stop sign where everybody stops and the car to the right gets to go first. So just to get a good sense, because I don't really know my audience here today, is there anybody in the group who has never driven a car when you can see good or never seen good enough to drive a car? Give folks a chance to unmute, see if you can answer. And so I'm going to assume that people who are staying muted have probably driven a car when they were younger or when they could see better. So you guys have some understanding of what the cars are doing out there on the road. So when we're listening at an intersection and we want to decide when it's safe to cross, probably the most difficult cars to compete with are the right turners. Now, occasionally you get some good left turners that like to cut in front of you, you know, and scare the heck out of you. But mostly it's the right turners because if it's a stop sign, your through traffic, you know, may or may not obey the traffic laws. They might slow down. You can hear them slow down, come to a stop. And then you give them a second because it's only a stop sign and chances are they'll move on and clear the way and you can cross when it's all quiet. But we need to really make sure as we age that we've got hearing enough to do that. So sometimes I'll take a senior client, especially to a stretch of road where we get a car, you know, every six or, you know, every, I don't know, 20 seconds or so. And I'll have them listen to the right and ignore the guys on the left. And then later we'll listen on the left and ignore the guys on the right. And what I want them to do is as soon as they hear a car coming way off in the distance, I'll have them say one and they'll start counting their seconds. One, two, three. And when that car gets right in front of their nose, they'll say now. And I'll see how far they've counted. And of course, I'm standing right behind them, so I'm hearing what they're hearing. And my left ear is going off to their left, and my right ear is going off to their right. My nose is pointed, usually the middle of their back, because I'm a lot shorter than Winford. But, you know, I'm listening to what they're listening to. And when that car is right in front of their nose, I know where it is, too. And then we talk about how fast they can get across the street and how much time they have from the time they first hear the car until it's right in front of their nose. And if they can hear a car far enough away, especially on the right side where they have to do two lanes of traffic to get all the way across, if they can hear those cars on the right before they get in front of their nose, there's a good chance they're going to be able to make a good safe crossing there. So these are pretty quiet intersections that I'm talking about. And has any of you guys ever worked with an O&M teacher on intersections like this, just stop sign type intersections? Anybody want to unmute in? Yeah. So I'm not sure. There's no.
This is Judy. I think you probably can assume that if they have, well, most of them haven't. So you can, yeah.
Okay, let's assume you guys haven't. So I'm not telling you anything new about driving, but maybe some new stuff about being a blind pedestrian, being whatever your identifier is. I identify as blind. I've got enough vision to get me in trouble, but I identify as blind. And if you're legally blind, really, you know, what's the difference? You might as well join the club. So this is one of the things I do at the quieter intersections, just to make sure that somebody actually has the ability to hear what the traffic's doing. And once we know that they can do that, then we start crossing. You know, they see how long it takes to get across, and I'll cross with them a few times and build up their confidence. And then when I'm sure that they're doing a good job, they're not going to make a mistake, you know, I'll say, all right, you tell me when to cross. And they've got me there with them the first few times to, you know, that security blanket where they think I'll stop them if they make a mistake. And I would, but very seldom do they make a mistake after that. You know, we've practiced enough and they've gotten some confidence and they've gotten some skill. And then when they build that confidence up a little more, I stand there on my side of the road and I'll say, all right, you go across and come back to me and I'm going to stay here. And the first time I do that with somebody, sometimes they're a little apprehensive, but we've done it so many times by then. They're like, okay, all right. I know what she told me to do. I know how to do this. And, you know, sometimes the first time they do that after being so worried about traffic, it's like they do an end zone dance when they get back to me. You know, they get so thrilled and excited. And, then it's time to move on to, you know, a little bit bigger intersections. So usually I kind of, you know, learn my city whenever I'm working in different parts. Since I'm itinerant now, I work in many different cities. So I go check out my city ahead of time and kind of plan things out where I'm going to take people. I say, all right, well, let's go find a lighted intersection that maybe isn't quite as busy as the big major arteries. Like Winford has a really nice, great big artery down by where he works. But I might go north of that to some like quieter areas, you know, and start people out with a light, but a quieter neighborhood, less businesses, less sound distractions. And when we get to a place like that, the first thing we want to learn is how well we can hear and identify our right turners. Because like I said, our right turners, you know, those are the guys we're in direct competition with them to get ourselves across the street before they want to make that turn in front of our path. And once people get confident about hearing the right turner, I know he's there, I know what he's going to do, that really alleviates a lot of stress over street crossings. Once they've figured out that they have that ability, you know, it's amazing how much confidence can be boosted by that. And so then we start listening to our through traffic. And there's something that we call the surge. And the surge is when the through traffic closest to your body is all stacked up at the light, raring to go, and the light turns green, and they take off, and you hear that big rumble, and all the cars are going, and they're starting to cross. Well, you check for right turners, because if your through traffic's on your left, you're going to be competing with them. And if everybody's going straight, you just follow them. So you're in your little crosswalk and they're in their lane of traffic and you guys are going the same way. And if they're on your right, that surge is going to come toward you. Well, that's a lot easier sometimes for folks, especially in the beginning, because a right turner will see a pedestrian in their windshield a lot easier than they'll see a pedestrian that's lined up going the same way they are. And that's because of you guys used to drive, you know how your cars are shaped, you know where that blind spot is over between the right passenger window and the windshield. You know, sometimes that can really keep them from seeing us, especially if you're short and skinny or if it's dark outside, or if you arrive at the intersection while they're sitting there waiting on the light to change in their favor, or they're intimidated in Oklahoma and don't know how to turn right on red, you know. So, you know, we work on those right turns and we work on that surge of parallel traffic. And, you know, that gives people, you know, the ability to say, hey, you know what, I think I can be safe out here. And then the left turners, mostly by and large, left turners go, if they don't have a designated light, they go when they get a chance. But when they get a chance, there's this hole in the sound. The traffic sounds like there's a hole in it. And you can tell there's something coming up. There's a hole in that traffic. Maybe I don't want to go. And somebody will make a left turn across your path that way. You'll hear them coming towards you, and then the sound will change. So we get out there on these bigger streets, and we practice listening to these sounds and identifying which way we think those cars are going to go. And the best way to do that is, and I can't always do that out in the field as an itinerant, but if I can get somebody to wear a blindfold, I do it, you know, because it really benefited me. Matter of fact, I had this incident. Is anybody on this call from Denver? I had probably the most inspirational incident of my entire training at Colorado Center for the Blind. I was on the corner of West Evans and Alameda. I'd been wearing a blindfold for a while, and there was a whole bunch of us out there on this one. The O&M teacher took, I don't know, three or four of us out there, and I'm all lined up, and this intersection, Winford has one just like it in Austin. It's MLK and Guadalupe. If for those of you in Austin, but in a great intersection. So I'm all up there and I'm worried about angled intersections. Am I going to like angled? Am I going to be able to do this? So I'm standing there and everybody's being quiet, listening to our cars, you know, and our idling cars, they all pull up and they're, and our surge starts, you know, and you do that left check real quick, make sure nobody's going to turn, and then you take off with your surge. And I was walking across this crosswalk. And I'm out there in the middle of it, and all of a sudden it dawned on me out of nowhere. You know, I've been in training for a while, but all of a sudden it just hit me like a thunderbolt. I've got a blindfold on, and I know what every one of these cars is doing. I know what every one of these cars is doing, almost like I can see them. And I got to the up curve, and I had this great big smile on my face. Man, I think my O&M teacher thought I got saved out there in the middle of that intersection. You know, I got this great big smile on my face, and I went, oh, my gosh, You know, she's, well, what's going on? I said, I just realized all my life people have said, you can't see good enough to do this and you can't see good enough to do that. And I just walked across this angled intersection with a blindfold on and I knew what every one of those cars was doing. And it just, it was this, you get these epiphanies in training. And I love it when it happens to my students because I remember what it felt like, you know. And if you get your local O&Ms, if you can get an NOMC, get somebody who's trained in structured discovery, you're going to, well, we, of course, sort of like that better. You know, we think that that's better. But don't just say, oh, well, I can't get an structured discovery O&M, so I'm just not going to take O&M. You know, take what you can get and then come back to us at NFB and we'll help you build on it. So get with your local O&Ms and don't be afraid to try things like this. You know, get out there and be flexible. Let them try different things with you. Winford and I used to problem solve together when we worked at the center. Sometimes if somebody's really having a hard time veering and we know their cane's in the right position and their head's in the right position, their shoulders are all squared up. And they're still veering on their crossings and getting disoriented in the parking lot. Sometimes we'll say, okay, step out with your left foot. Always step out with your left foot, or we'll pick a foot, whichever one looks the most promising, you know, depending on how they're veering. And so we'll have them step out with a certain foot, or we'll have them use their cane in their opposite hand. And which is, I don't know if anybody's gone over this with you, because I know you've done a lot of work this week, but if you can practice with your cane in each hand, you know, then you're going to be able to use it anywhere. I had really bad carpal tunnel syndrome at Louisiana Tech, and I was changing my hand position every 10 minutes. But if I couldn't have used my cane in my left hand, I'd have been in big trouble. Because sometimes I had to be tested on days when the carpal tunnel was flaring up. And I would literally just, you know, be crossing a street and get to the up curb and toss my cane in my other hand just because I was in so much pain. And I would never pass those tests if I couldn't have done it in each hand. So let's go back to our street crossings here. We've got our two-way stops, four-way stops, three-way stops with our T intersections. Winford said some of you guys were asking about traffic circles. And Winford has some pretty cool traffic circles in Austin. Those are about the only kind of traffic circles. Oops, I think I'm... Anyway, those are about the only kind of traffic circles I've ever messed with. There's a really big hair-raising traffic circle in Washington, D.C. called DuPont Circle. And I always wanted to play with that one, but I never have gotten a chance. We went to Washington Seminar when I was at Louisiana Tech, and we were all geared up to go play with it. And Washington was having a blizzard, as it does so many times, so often that time of year, and we didn't get to go do it. So with a traffic circle, it's just going to change the sound of your parallel and cross traffic. And I had an interesting situation when I first came to Austin. There's a guy named Doug Boone who used to go all over the country and do group training, staff trainings, and travel teacher. And he did things other than O&M too, but he did a lot of O&M. And he came to Texas. And I don't think, well, Winford, I don't think you were in this class, but some of our colleagues were. And we were in an area with a traffic circle. And since I had just moved to Austin, I didn't know my area. I didn't have any idea where we were. He just drove us over there in a van and we started walking across the streets. And we're all kind of taking turns, taking the lead. And he gets us to this traffic circle. He says, okay, everybody, just stand here and listen. So I'm listening to my parallel traffic because that's the traffic I'm going to go with, right? I want to know what my cross traffic's doing, but I want to know what my parallel's doing because those are the good guys that I'm going to follow. And I heard a car coming toward me on my parallel street. So I'm expecting it to pass me on my left. And all of a sudden, it just disappeared. It didn't turn left, you know, or for the car's perspective, it didn't turn right and go off and disappear like they do because you didn't have that fading noise. You had the noise coming towards you getting louder. And then all of a sudden, it just seemed like it was gone. And then it came back. And then eventually he passed me on the left and I went, what? He went behind something. And so I asked Doug, I said, is there construction going on out there? Why is that car sounding like he's going behind an obstacle? And Doug's like, well, just listen, keep going, keep listening. And then a car came from my right. And when it came from my right, it got right in front of me. And it sounded like it was about the usual distance that your cross traffic is when it's in front of you. And then all of a sudden, it sounded like it made a right turn, like it was going to go away from me. And then it disappeared. instead of fading off in the distance like I expected, it just vanished. Poof. And then all of a sudden, there was the sound of a car going off to my left, you know, as if it had gone through the intersection, except for that tiny bit of time when it just seemed to vanish. Now, I'm sure the car was still making noise, but I was, you know, really straining to hear everything and concentrate. And there weren't a whole lot of neighborhood noises around. But for some reason, it just seemed that when the car went behind the obstacle, I didn't hear the noise. And or maybe it was too muffled and I didn't notice it. So eventually we learned that this was what a traffic circle sounds like. So typically, if you're listening, you just listen to it like you would any other traffic, except when your cross traffic's coming toward you on the side of your body with the traffic circle, that's going to make a little bit different sound. You're going to think for a minute that the car is turning and going down your parallel street, but then he's going to just wrap around that obstacle and keep heading towards you. So when you hear a car off in the distance, off to your left, let's say that traffic circle is off to your left, you hear it coming towards you, you got to monitor that one a little bit more because, you know, you got to give him a chance after he turns left to make sure he really turned left, you know, and not coming towards you. So basically, you know, like I said, it's always easier with an O&M teacher to get out there and practice. If you have enough skill already with a cane, if you're not going to fall off a curb or choose to cross when it's not safe or something like that, you may not always need an O&M teacher. Sometimes if you just find a blind person that you think travels better than you do, go hang out with them, go places with them. Sometimes just going out for entertainment. We do that at our NFB meetings here in Tulsa. When we were meeting live before the pandemic, we used to go out to lunch after the meeting. And so, yeah, okay, I'm the O&M teacher in the group. And so I ended up kind of falling to the back, picking up the stragglers. And if somebody was having special problems, but the ones up front were the best travelers in the group. And, you know, people who walked fast and could keep up with them, they would go with them. And the better travelers would kind of give them little pointers and tips here and there. And so even though they weren't O&M teachers, they were good travelers. And we've done that in the NFB for, oh, I don't know, 78, almost 80 years, I guess. The better travelers would kind of coach and bring along the newer folks and people who are new to a cane, new to the big bad B word, you know. So you don't always need an O&M teacher, but if you can get one, and especially if you can get one focusing on structured discovery, you're going to get a lot better training. So what about this group? Do you guys have any questions yet?
Let's see. Jane, what about some of the, like the traffic lights, you know how we have the audible pedestrian, that and the, like the mid-block there at Lamar going to the triangle?
Oh, yeah. There are all kinds of audible pedestrian signals. So the biggest thing I want you guys to remember about audible pedestrian signals is it only tells you what color the light is. It doesn't tell you if some idiot is going to race the yellow light and be in the middle of the intersection when it's red. It's not going to tell you if some nutty Tulsan is going to try to make a left turn out of schedule and cut through and have everybody honk at him. You know, it's not going to tell you if somebody's going to gun his engine, make a right turn, you know, when you think it's okay for you to go. So when you hear it, I want you to think it only means the light's green. My traffic can go. You still have to double check with your cars because your cars will never lie to you. The light might lie to you, that beeping, that audible signal. You've got some that will just beep and some will make different noises. We have one in downtown Tulsa that does a chirp when you're going, the street going east to west has a green light, and it does a cuckoo when the north-south street has a green light.
Oh, wow.
And there's some that have these really fancy recordings. I think like, I want to say 48th and Lamar, or not 48th, 45, 44. Yeah, 48th and Lamar down there by the 7-Eleven. It will say, walk sign is on to cross Lamar. Walk sign is on. Well, you know, that's all well and cool, but if it's too loud, sometimes it can impact your ability to hear a car that wants to go out of turn. And when you've practiced with these streets enough, you can tell, you can hear the way they sound. That doesn't sound right I'm not going. I always tell my students when a guy's going to make, car's going to make a right turn. Sometimes when I'm standing there lining up and listening, it sounds like that car is snuggling up to my left side just as he's going to make a right turn. And sometimes I can tell by that engine, the way he's snuggling up to my left side. Yeah, he wants to make a right turn. And sometimes he fools me and goes straight, but that's okay. It's better than fooling me and making a right turn when I don't think he is. And some of those subtle sounds may be harder to hear if the audible pedestrian signal is too loud. Sometimes also the audible signal will have a beacon on the other side of the street. So it will help you as you're going across, especially if you have a hard time veering. That beacon can help you keep straight. But the thing is, I don't want people to get used to having that beacon because we don't always get them. And if you practice your hand position, your head position, staying in step, all the different things that they've discussed all week long, you know, if you practice that and maintain that straight line of travel, then you're not going to get in trouble at a place where there's no beacon. And once you start crossing, you're on your own, you know, so don't count on those. But once in a while, you'll have them, and that's okay. You know, they're cool. So let's see, what else is there? We have the ones with the recording that will talk to you, the ones with just a cuckoo and chirp. And then some of them, we actually have a really bad one. And I use this as an example. Once I start taking my students around to the light, to the audible signals, I take them around to this one in Tulsa that makes the exact same sound no matter which street has green light. And it's an awful sound. It sounds like a machine gun. It goes, you know, and I'll say, okay, well, which street has the green light? 11th or Yale? I'll say, well, I don't know. Okay, so let's listen to the other sound and see how it's different. And, you know, I'll say, well, while we're listening to this sound, which street is rolling? So, okay, 11th is rolling. So that must be for Yale, right? Okay, well, let's listen to what happens when Yale starts rolling. It's the same sound. It absolutely does no good at all. Fortunately, it's not loud enough for most of my folks to mask the sound of through traffic on either street, so they can still listen to the sound of their traffic, because that's always going to be your reliable clue. No matter what that signal does, no matter how fancy it is, how cool it is, your parallel traffic, especially if you've got enough parallel traffic, it's always going to be your best clue. I like lighted audible pedestrian signals when they happen at quieter intersections with intermittent traffic, because sometimes when there's not a lot of traffic, somebody will speed up because he knows it's not a busy street. There's nobody in front of him, and he'll break the speed limit and try to get across town faster. And, you know, you have no idea how fast he's going to be coming at you. And if he thinks he's got a green light, he's just going to sail on through. And if you can't tell what color the light is before he gets there, because there's no other traffic around, you know, sometimes that can make it a little harder to cross the quiet streets. Also, sometimes the social conventions of street crossing. I scared this little lady. We had an NFB, some kind of a planning meeting at a hotel downtown here in Tulsa. And I left the hotel and was walking back to the bus terminal. And there was this quiet little corner here with absolutely no way to tell what color the light was, and not a darn car on it. It was Saturday morning and nobody was downtown. So I listened and nobody was off in the distance on either street, and nobody was going to give me a clue. So there's nobody out there to run over me, right? So I just crossed. And there was a lady cleaning the outer seating area at the restaurant at the hotel. And boy, she just about panicked because I was crossing against the light. So, I mean, sometimes social convention, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. But still, sometimes having an audible signal at places like that isn't a bad thing. What I don't like is when they spend money on an audible signal at an intersection that has such heavy balanced traffic that I feel like the cars just walk us across the street, you know. That irritates me, but traffic engineers don't consult us.
So it looks like Shelly, you have a question?
I've asked her to unmute.
Shelly, I think I know you. What's your last name?
Okay, there I am. Yes, you do know me, Miss Jane. It is so fun to hear you.
Yeah. What's your question?
Well, mentioned something about the audible traffic signals as well. Here in Columbia, South Carolina, I used to live in a part of town in an apartment building, and there was a mall across the street, and it wasn't directly across from the apartment building. It was to the right, up the sidewalk. Oh, probably the distance of maybe a block and a half, something like that. And there was an audible signal that could take you across the street, North Beltline, that had pretty good traffic coming and going. It's a Beltline street in Columbia is a pretty major through street both ways. But I stood there. I punched the button for this because a lot of times I don't. I'll just go ahead and cross. But I did punch the button, and it was the most god-awful sound I ever heard in my life. It sounded like a fire engine just sitting right above your head. And I mean, oh, it goodness. Blocked the sound from yeah. It was so disturbing to me because it just kind of jolted my insides as loud as it was. And I thought, there is no way I'm crossing this street. And I think I ended up walking up to the corner and coming back because I was so disturbed over it. It just was incredibly loud. So sometimes, like Jane was saying, the cities don't have the best sense when it comes to what kind of a audible signal they put. So be very careful, because if it's that distracting... Yeah, it was awful.
We had one in Denver. As a matter of fact, I think it was the first audible signal I ever encountered. We had one in Denver at, what was it, Cherry Street Mall? And I wouldn't cross there. I would go down a ways and find another crossing because it was so loud. It masked the sound of all my other traffic.
Yes.
It was a T intersection that went straight into the mall. And I wanted to know who was turning. I was, you know, hey, I'm not fooling around here. I want to know who's turning.
So
I just didn't cross it.
So one of the things with the, so we used to, here in Austin, when I first got here, we used to have the audible pedestrian, the one that at 45th and Lamar. And it also used to do the cuckoo bird one direction and the chirping the other direction. Excuse me. They changed it out because we had in the area, we have mockingbirds. And the mockingbirds would sit up on that light pole thing and they would mimic those two different things. And it was completely random. So it could do the cuckoo during the time it's supposed to be chirping and vice versa. And we used to work with the engineers here. They would come and we would talk to them about the different pedestrian lights and the different ways of maybe doing the curb cuts and stuff like that. Unfortunately, they typically didn't listen to us. But we did do one of them, and we were on 11th and Red River. And it was actually, the engineer actually caught it. It would tell you the walk signs on to cross Red River at 11th or 11th at Red River and vice versa. Well, they pushed the button and it starts saying that to cross Red River. And then they pushed the button the other direction, you know, as you're crossing 11th Street. And the audio pedestrian thing said the exact same thing. So they're like, oh, wait a minute. This is one. So they went in and fixed it. But yes, like Jane is saying with the traffic lights and things like that, it's that traffic that you really want to use, as it starts to move with that surge is, when you want to move. When we talked about that traffic circle, I remember that we do have those here. They're small ones, cause they're in like a residential area. So they're really small. And when that car is coming from behind you on your left and it's going through that traffic circle, it almost sounds like it's going to be turning to the right to go. If you're facing, say, south, it sounds like it's going to turn to go west, but then it circles around south and then it goes off to your left to go the other direction. It's kind of weird. And we do have another one. Joni and I have actually talked about going in, and Drew, we've all talked about going in, playing with it. And it seems like it's a big one, east of Duval on 45th Street. So, we're going to go and try and check that one out and stuff like that. So,
but yeah, always pay attention to that parallel traffic, because you know, that will not lie to you. The buttons can break down sometimes. And here's the other thing, guys, you're going to have some buttons where you have to push the button, you have to actuate it, which means if you don't really want that noise in your ears, you can just listen to your traffic. The bad part is sometimes if you don't push the button, depending on the nature of the intersection, you may never get a green light. Because if your cross street is a main artery and your parallel street is a little bit smaller with less traffic, there are things that they put in the pavement, in the asphalt, down in the middle of the intersection, so that when a car rolls onto it, it actuates the green light. So it starts the cycle so that driver gets a green light. And if we don't push the button and a car doesn't show up to go, we could be waiting for a long time. So the other kind is the ones where you don't have any choice. Downtown in Tulsa, these things just chirp and cuckoo all day long, and you don't, there's no button to push. That's just what they do. So, you know, we'll be walking down 10th Street, and you can, when you get to Detroit, you can hear 9th Street chirping down there. So, but it's usually too far away for people to think that it means 10th Street. So it's, that's not really a problem. It's just, we would like it better if we had a choice. That way we could choose not to do it if there was a reason to choose not to do it.
This is Judy.
This is Stuart Prost. We have a question from Jean Parks.
Okay.
Hello. Thank you very much. I think I have, I'm unmuted too. Am I not?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. My curiosity is, and understand, I had O&M training 20 years ago when I had tunnel vision. So
you're fading out. I think your connection, your internet.
Yeah, it's dragging real bad. So go back to tunnel vision.
I think we're going to have to wait a minute or something. Your internet connection is not working. I don't know if you're hearing me.
I don't think she's hearing us either.
No.
Jean?
They just have to mute her, I think, unfortunately.
Do you want to mute her?
Yeah, we're finished.
There we go. Well, it won't help.
Maybe it won't help, but she's still going.
I've
Wow, Zoom won't even let me mute her. Okay. There you go.
There we go. Okay.
Is there any other
this
questions?
Is Michael. I do have two questions.
Sure.
One of my biggest fears, and I'm open to ideas on how to deal with this, are really windy days. I feel like I've taken my life in my hands sometimes, you know. But so any tips for navigating really 30-plus mile-an-hour winds? And the other one has to do with, I'm at a point when I'm about to get some hearing aids, and I've noticed that people, when they seem to get hearing aids, their ability to judge distance, it seems to alter that. So any thoughts on either of those two?
Yeah, hearing aids can be a pain in the butt when it comes to trying to localize sound. So you want to work with your audiologist. You want to try, and I know it can be expensive, but you want to get the best digital hearing aids you can get. And you want to work with that audiologist and explain that these hearing aids need to be balanced, because if you have one ear that's better than the other ear, they need to tune the hearing aids so that they're balanced and you can localize whether a sound is on your left or right, or sometimes in front and back. The really, really good hearing aids, sometimes people can do that really well. And I found that when people get the free hearing aids from the School for the Deaf here in Oklahoma, they're just not that good. They really have a hard time localizing the sounds. And so if you get some digital ones, especially the Bluetooth ones that you can use with your phone, you know, you can turn your phone off. And if they're really high end, you can learn to localize. But when you mentioned the wind, that was the first thing I was going to ask you was, do you have hearing aids? Because the wind and hearing aids, oh, Lord, that's just running the gauntlet right there. So even without hearing aids, if you're walking in the wind, you can turn your head and try to keep the wind from blowing directly down into your ear canal. You can cup your ear with, you know, the hand that isn't using the cane, and maneuver, just move your head. But the thing is, once you start walking, once you've made the decision to cross, then that nose needs to come forward again, or you're going to walk where your nose is going. So if you take, let's say your right ear is your better ear, and you cup that right ear and you turn it so that the wind isn't blowing down into your ear canal. Then you might hear your traffic, but when you start walking, if you leave it like that, you're going to veer off to the left. So, you know, as soon as you determine it's safe to cross, you need to snap that nose forward again, or, you know, like I said, you're going to have some trouble. With hearing aids, it's a duck shoot. I don't know if you're going to be able to cross the really quiet streets or not when it gets 30 miles an hour. I have one student who won't try it. He can handle the big intersections because the roar of the traffic is really helpful. But the ones by his house that he has to cross before he gets to the easier ones, is he can stand there all day and all he hears is, you know. So that is, it makes it difficult because the streets he has trouble with are in such a quiet residential neighborhood that he can't hold up a deaf blind street crossing sign and get help because there's no pedestrians out there. Yeah. So he just has to Uber to a populous location and then he can run around town and do what he wants to do. But hearing aids really are a problem in that kind of wind. Where do you live, Michael?
Well, I live in Indiana, Tornado Alley, but
One of the things that here at our center, we are getting really, really good. Our deaf-blind department, it has improved quite a bit, and we got a really good ear doctor that she has a mobile unit, and she comes by and she does the hearing aids and all this kind of stuff, and she's really conscious and about, you know, what a blind person needs as far as hearing aids and all that. And when our students come in with just crappy hearing aids, she gets really irritated because she knows that the kind they have is not very good. But she gives them some that you can also, it has like three or four different channels on them. So that, for example, if you're in a restaurant, you can switch it to where it somehow mutes the background noise. It has a setting where you can do another setting where it does something for the, when you're outside, it does a different, it's a different setting. So, and, you know, of course, they're pretty expensive, but those are some recommendations that, you know, trying to explain the best you can to the audiologist, I guess what you call it, to see if they can come up with the right type of hearing aids for you.
Okay. So, folks, I noticed that we've got a lot of participants in here, a lot of senior retreat members, and I'm assuming that some of you guys are staff. I can kind of tell, you know, but I don't know a lot of you, but I, you know, kind of get an idea of who's staff and who's maybe an attendee. And those of you who have questions and are just struggling to unmute, or maybe just feeling a little shy about it, I'm sure that somebody in the retreat can help you contact some of the orientation and mobility instructors who've been on this week. And Winford knows how to get a hold of me. He's got my work email and I think he's got my work phone number. And since it's NFB, I don't mind if my personal phone number gets out because I usually do separate stuff. I'll do my work phone number with clients at work, and then I'll do my home phone number with Federationists. And so that doesn't bother me, you know. If you have questions later, you're always welcome to get in touch with me. And Winford knows the answer too, you know, so he could have given this presentation. But, you know, I'm sure there are ways that they can help you guys get in touch with us if you have questions and you just need to ask them later because it's hard to unmute right now. So it is 11:47. Does anybody else have
questions?
I have one more, and I know how I deal with it, but I don't think this has been covered. I live in a small town, you know, Indiana, some of these older towns that don't have a lot of sidewalks. So you either end up having to walk down the left side of the street and listen for traffic coming at you, or, you know, your cane technique's a little bit different because you want to make sure you're a little bit more shorelining so you're not going off in the ditch or manhole or something. So any suggestions to share with everyone about those situations?
Sounds like you've got the right idea. You walk against traffic, and yeah, you want to shoreline a lot, because if you don't shoreline, you could veer out into the middle of the street. And if you get turned around, especially on a cloudy day or at night when you don't have the sun cues, you could end up walking the wrong direction and not notice. Or you get to an intersection and you turn a corner and don't realize you've turned. It's kind of a, Shortlining is one of those techniques that's ambivalent, because if you do it too much, it can cause problems later. You can turn without realizing it. But if you don't do it when you need to do it, you're either going to miss a turn or take a turn you didn't want because you didn't know there was a turn there. So it's something that you don't want to just do everywhere, but when you have to, you have to. So if you're walking down a street and you get out in the middle because there's no traffic and you don't like the way the asphalt dovetails into the grass or the gravel or whatever, especially if you have small feet and you keep twisting an ankle, you know, sometimes I'll double wide my arc just so I can walk in a place where I've got better footing and still touch my grass on the side. But, you know, if you get to a wide space in the road and you've got two little streets crossing each other, and if you're not really good at walking straight, you could make a left or right turn, a great big old circle or something, and not realize it if you're not staying close to your shoreline. And when you're going around parked cars, of course, everybody knows what happens if you don't think about the mirrors. Ow, you know, that can hurt. But as you're going around, you need to be paying attention to oncoming traffic because they don't know you're there. So, you know, just one of the things I like to do is I might touch that car with my cane and then bring that cane like straight up and down in front of me to be checking for the mirror. And while I'm sweeping, let's say that car's on my, well, it should be on my left. If the car parked car's on my left, I sweep left with my cane almost straight up and down to hit that mirror. And then I do the same technique and just sweep way out to my right and clear the right side of my body. But it gives drivers a chance to see the cane moving, because folks will see a cane in motion easier than they'll see a cane that's, you know, tucked in close to your body and not moving much. And of course, at night, that white paint will reflect off of their car lights. So it's not as reflective as some of the other types of canes, but we got better canes anyway, so we deal with it anyway. So you just, you're doing everything that you need to do, Michael. It sounds like you know what to do about it. You just, sometimes you're going to have more rugged terrain because you're on the side of the road. After there's some places where you'll listen to cars and you'll go, I am not doing this. I'm going to go over a block. I'm going to go somewhere else. You know, I'm going to find a way around this. I am not walking, you know, with no sidewalks on a street like this. And
the other thing, the other thing is, again, when you're like she said, you guys got this. When you're shorelining, though, I like to be at least a half a foot away from that curb or gravel area. So that I'm definitely going to, that I'm definitely going to know the difference in the terrain that my foot's stepping on versus where the cane is hitting. One of the things that I do when I'm, when I shoreline on, I'm going past the car, like you have the handle of your cane, I might slide my hand maybe a one fist and a half ish down the, to the body of the cane. And I kind of do like a, I tap the car to the left and then I kind of swivel the handle to come across in front of me near the top part of that car, so that that part of the handle may catch the mirror as I'm going by.
Yeah.
And then you also always, always want to make sure that you're arcing that cane a good 6-8 inches outside of your elbow to make sure that, and like she's saying, that the traffic coming towards you will see the cane. So.
Yeah, you can widen your arc up anywhere. And as a matter of fact, while we're on the subject of the arc, and I'm sure they covered this earlier in the week, that you want to keep your hands centered and you want to go a little bit outside the widest part of your body. For most of my students, it's their shoulders. For me, it's my hips, you know. But something that I've done, and this is why I really, really push you guys to go get an O&M teacher, because they'll help you problem solve when you have other concerns, you know, bigger problems than blindness to work around. I had a young man with a spinal deformity, and he, his biggest complaint when I met with him, he was still in school then, and I met with him and his mother, and I said, okay, they had asked for an NOMC. They wanted a structured discovery teacher. I said, well, what is your biggest thing you need to focus on? And he said, I can't walk straight. He said, I go to these conventions and all these blind guys are going in a straight line, and I can't walk straight. And his mom said they worked with him for 3 years in the public schools and could not get him to walk straight. And I said, okay, well, let's talk about where your hand is. And because of his spinal deformity, what I did was I moved his midline from, your midline goes from the top of your head, down the middle of your nose, down your sternum to your belly button, and right between your toes. So I moved his midline over to the right part of his right shoulder. And I said, now you have to clear your body on the left, but your cane has to go a whole body's width away on the right, or you're not going to be balanced and you won't go straight. And so he uses a double wide arc, but the boy walks straight, you know, because we modified that midline because his, you know, his body wouldn't let him put his hand where I wanted him to, you know, so he had other disabilities. I've got clients with walkers. I've got clients with wheelchairs and mobility scooters. I have been so proud. I was asked for 2 years in a row, and I've crossed my fingers and hoping I get to do it in Houston too. So I've been so proud to be asked by National Blindness Professional Certification Board to give presentations on wheelchairs and mobility scooters and white canes at convention at the O&M program.
Okay, we have two hands raised.
Tracy has her hand up.
Yep, Tracy and then Nancy.
I just want to say that if you don't like the way you're...
Uh-oh.
Oh, we lost Tracy. Sorry?
It looks like she's still there.
Yeah, but you can't hear her.
Mm.
Oh. Oh, good grief.
Jason.
Okay.
Why don't we move on to Nancy Yeager and then try to come back?
Sorry, my microphone stopped working. Can you hear me now?
Now we hear.
Oh, good. Sorry. I want to say that if you don't like the way that your audible signals are in your town, you have every right to contact your traffic department or your police department or your city council or whoever can direct you to the right people and say, this isn't good, I want it changed, or I want something at this intersection because I'm not safe. They might not do it, but they might, and you might have to yell a lot to get it done. But if you're not safe, you know, you have the same rights as everybody else to cross the darn street. So don't be shy. That's all I want to say.
Have it.
All right, Nancy?
Nancy, I just asked her to unmute. I think she just unmuted. Nope.
Hello?
Nancy, are you there?
She's still muted.
Yeah, I think she's having a hard time unmuting. Does anybody know what kind of phone she's using, or she's dialing in on one tap?
I think she's on a computer.
This is Judy. I know we're going to run out of time shortly. So I just want to warn people, you know, when you talk about insisting with traffic departments that you need, this is not a safe intersection for you, you want to make sure it's not because you didn't get the right kind of training, because other blind people are going to say, I do that intersection all the time.
Oh, yeah. So
one of the things that we all should remember is to get to know the people in our area, particularly NFB members who are traveling some, and get some advice from them before you start insisting on changes for traffic. If a lot of them agree with you, you can have a whole army helping you. But if it's because you haven't had the chance to have the right kind of instruction to deal with a street crossing, then you might be able to solve the problem a lot more easily.
That's correct. And also, if for whatever reason you just haven't been out there traveling in a long time and are like recuperating, you know, trying to get back into it, into the travel, it could be for that too. So, yeah, you definitely gotta, you know, like, yep.
And you guys have to remember, sometimes there are disabilities out there bigger than blindness. And we get them sometimes when we get older. I was working with a client once on getting her signed up for paratransit. And the lady over the phone who was helping us with the application was trying to find out what her biggest disability was so that, you know, she could put it on the form. And she was talking about her, you know, how much vision she lost. And I said, yeah, but Susie, remember we talked about why you can't walk down to that bus stop over there on 49th Street? And, oh, yeah, well, why can't you do that? You know, I can do that. Oh, yeah, that's right. And so then I was able to direct her to talk about her congestive heart failure and her arthritis and her knee replacements and all the other disabilities that piled up that made it harder for her to do the things that other blind people do. And so, you know, mostly I wanted to redirect her so she wouldn't lower her expectations as a blind person for the things that she could do. just because she couldn't see well enough to do, you know, the things the way she thought she should. And once she understood that, oh yeah, it's not my eyes that keep me from going out and catching that bus, it's something else. Then that leads later to, oh yeah, it's not my eyes that keep me from crocheting again, or it's not my eyes that keep me from going to church again. It's, you know, so maybe there's another way I can do that. And that helps her keep those expectations up. So, you know, don't blame something on blindness if you're not 100% sure that blindness is the culprit, because it gets blamed for more than it really deserves.
Okay. I think we want to thank Winfred and Jane for a jam-packed full hour here.